Welcome to All Things Sleep and Parenting. I'm Pam.
And I'm Elisa. We are holistic infant and child sleep consultants with a background in early childhood education.
And we're the founders of Restful Parenting.
And I'm Heidi. I'm also an early childhood educator and the owner of Blossom Early Learning.
Join us as we chat all things sleep, parenting, development, and everything in between. Be sure to hit subscribe and share with your friends and family.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to this week's episode. This is part two. So if you haven't listened to part one, go back to part one and then come back for this one. But this is part two. With me, as always, I have Elisa.
Hello.
And part two of the session, we have Jen with us. Hi, Jen.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us. So just as a little recap before we jump into the second part of our podcast, in the first part of the podcast, we chatted about the hypoarousal state, the hyperarousal state, and that zone of tolerance, and how parenting can cause us to either go into that hyper, where we really want to try and stay in that zone of tolerance. And it can be traced back to our childhood. It can be traced back to just our communication skills, how we manage things. But what we really want to focus on today, we got really great explanations as to kind of what the different states meant in the first part. And today's second part of the podcast, we're going to chat about when we start to feel like we're coming out of that zone of tolerance, how we stay in that zone of tolerance, how to get back online again into that zone of tolerance. Because parenting is hard. We're very clear on that. Parenting is hard at all ages. And it is hard as adults to always be in that zone of tolerance. And if these aren't skills that we've learned before, or skills that we've tried to attempt or even tried to understand, because for a lot of people, once we get out of that zone of tolerance, we just don't know what to do to come back down. So today's podcast, we're going to chat with Jen and Elisa and myself about some of those skills. Once we're out of that zone of tolerance, how do we come back? What can we do to recognize what's going on, how to help it, how to retrain our brain, how to just grow in how we manage our, you know, our basic things, but right up into like our really hard things. And like I said, parenting is hard. So it falls right into that category. So once again, Jen, thank you so much. Let's just jump in. Where do we want to start when talking about these skills for staying and getting into that zone of tolerance?
So let's maybe start with our window of tolerance, and how do we stay there? How do we know that we're in our window of tolerance? Because a lot of these skills are practiced in the window of tolerance. It's really, really hard to access a skill that we don't practice when we are feeling good, when we are feeling calm. Because what happens is when we practice it, when we're not hijacked, when we're not in a hyper arousal, we're able to access it when we are. And so for me, it's like practice, 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 because it's going to be really, really hard if I'm really angry, really frustrated, to pull it out into my thinking part of the brain and say, oh, what do I do here right now? And so if I'm doing it when I am in my thinking part of my brain, when I get really emotional, I can access it there as well. And so my first part is for people to start tracking, to being able to pay attention, is how am I feeling right now with my children? How do I know? And so it might be like I'm feeling like I'm in my window of tolerance and that things are going really well. I'm connected and I'm curious. But what's happening inside of me to tell me that I know that I'm there? And so then also, what's happening in those moments when I am really frustrated or I've checked out, what does that feel like in those moments? And so that's where it would be spending some time getting to know my own body and my own sensations that are telling me, how do I know I'm there? Because it's like, okay, I know that I'm angry, and what's telling me that I'm angry? And so when I say that, what we're doing is we're building something called interoception. And so when we build interoception, we're understanding our internal world, which allows us to make changes. Awareness of our internal world then supports us to make some changes to that, because that's what we're going to do, is we're going to shift some of those things in our internal world while understanding what our external world is, what are our triggers.
when we're looking at that tracking, we'll often hear, I don't know, it's just, it's 0 to 60. And I don't even know how I get this angry, but, mm-hmm. but there are pieces. If we really are able to take that second, it's not 0 to 60. There are little pieces that we may be feeling. What are some of those things that like someone could be feeling, those that maybe step 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it's not 0 to 60, anything in between.
Right. And so before we get there, you said something that's really important is our pause, right? As we start to understand that we're going to look internally at what's happening, is first we have to pause and we have to practice the pause. And then we go internal. And so the things that we could start to feel is people might start to notice their heart race, or their, like, kind of feels it. Or they may start to feel like a restriction in their breath. Sometimes people will talk about a pressure on their chest. Sometimes it's like there's like an energy in their body. So they feel like their body has like, it's almost like they've talked about like vibrating. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I notice is I start to kind of clench my hands a little bit. Other people will talk about like their jaw. And so they'll just like start to clench their jaw. There's all of these kind of small sensations that are starting to happen in response to the environment. Or maybe it's like we're coming home from work and our shoulders are up by our ear a little bit. Or I'm getting a tension. Or people will talk about tension headaches. And that's because their body is telling them something over a prolonged period of time. So we check in with that. And then we go, oh, maybe I am feeling really stressed. And that means I'll be a little bit more vulnerable to feeling more frustrated when I go home or in the environment. So we're just starting to pay attention to our body, where we hold our stress, and what that internal world feels like. Again, even the stomach, right? Our gut responses. We hear some of this all the time.
So first step, just to recap, would be pausing and then just trying to track what's happening. That well, practice too. And we see the same thing with our little guys, right? If they're learning how to roll, if they're learning how to sit or crawl or stand, practice, because they're going to want to use nap time and bedtime to practice. So practice in the crib, get that. Practice makes progress. And we really want to, at non-sleep times, we're practicing these new skills. And this is a new skill. A lot of people have not been taught this skill. This is a new skill that needs that same practice. So practice at non-triggered, angry, upset times, hypo response times. And then really starting to like take that pause and noticing where it's affecting your body internally.
You've drawn such a wonderful parallel. You think about kids, when they start to crawl or walk, they fall. They mm-hmm. fall over and over and over, and they don't give up. They get up and keep trying. And yet sometimes us as parents, we fall. We get angry. And then we go, oh, that doesn't work. No. It's not that it doesn't work. It means, and you said, practice makes progress, which I like. That cued into my ear. I was like, wow, I like that. Practice makes progress. And so we understand it in the context of our children, and we get to do it for ourselves too. And our children are great role models of grit and continuing to keep going and practicing. So thank you for that. That was wonderful.
I love it. Yes. A practice makes progress is like my favorite thing to say in my family, because I'm very clear there's no such thing as perfection. It's not what we're aiming for. But we just keep practicing. And yes, there's going to be times where you're not going to be able to do it. And exactly that, you're going to fall. But the fact that you're getting up and you're retrying, and I know we're going to get into this, but not only will these steps and skills benefit you in your growth and development as an adult and as an overall person, but you're now going to be modeling and showing and teaching your children these skills. Like, this is something to me that I feel is, and Elisa, I know, just so important that we can teach our children these skills. And we're their teachers, we're their number one role models. So as we're learning this, putting this into practice, they're learning, they're seeing it, they're going to. And Jen, there was something that you said in our little chit chat beforehand, and I wrote down, what we do is so much more important than what we say. And I really feel like this role modeling for our children is huge. So it's beneficial on both sides as adults through our parenting to be able to learn these new skills. And it's important to put these new skills into place and grow, but we're also teaching and modeling.
And Pam, you just hit on step three, right? You've got pause, track, and then the third part of staying in our window of tolerance is we can narrate it, we can tell. And so as we start to pay attention to, okay, mommy feels frustrated right now, I'm naming my emotion for my children so that they understand, oh, this is what frustration is, or this is what anger is, or sadness is, or any, I'm happy, right? Enjoy. And mom's going to go take a drink of water. Mom's going to take a pause right now. Mom's going to have a moment to be able to collect my thoughts. I'm feeling overwhelmed right now. I say that sometimes, like, I'm feeling overwhelmed right now. Mom needs a moment to be able to just take a deep breath so that I can get my thinking part of my brain back on. And so we're not only role modeling, which is usually where parents kind of cue into, is like, yeah, I want to role model that for my kid. But kind of from a brain perspective is when I name my emotion, and we do this for kids, we name it to tame it. That's a Dan Siegel phrase, not mine. So that helps our brain go, when we name that emotional part of our brain, our thinking part of the brain goes, oh, I know what to do in this moment. And so it helps our brain stay online as well.
And then also the naming it, if we do fall, because we will fall. And I know we have a podcast all about how, like, it is important sometimes for them to see us fall so that they can see how we got back up again and repaired that. But I also love naming those emotions as well after the fact, if I did fall, or, you know, when I'm going back to kind of talk about it and apologize, like, I was really overwhelmed at that moment and I didn't know what to do with my body at that moment, or, you know, I had a hard time figuring out what I could do with my body at that moment, and then talking it through and modeling it after the fact as well, if we do have those falls.
And so we have talked about repair, which I think is wonderful, but I kind of think about these parallel things as we repair and we're talking it through with our children, is I felt overwhelmed and I, you know, I shouldn't have raised my voice, or I should have been able to, I would like to be able to do this differently. What we're helping is ourselves understand what, you know, I don't want to use the word wrong, but what kind of went off track. Mm-hmm. And so not only are we repairing, but we're helping build, okay, this is what I'd like to do different next time. And again, I'm going to say is that the off track is usually when we get into that hyper arousal or hypoarousal. And this is where it's so important for us to practice it in our window of tolerance, right? When we start to feel, okay, I'm feeling agitated, but it's only like a 2 out of 10 right now. And you catch the, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4s. As you start to track that internal world, because you're like, ooh, I can feel my heart going a little bit right now. I can feel, you know, these shifts. It's also where once we start to track our internal world, we get to match coping skills. You know, mm-hmm. I've had so many people in my office where they're like, you know, I went and saw so-and-so and they gave me these wonderful coping skills. None of it works for me. And none of it, like, I just can't do it. One is it's really difficult for them to access it when they're in that aroused state. And then two is that they may not be matching the right coping skill to what their body needs in that moment. And so that's where it's like that talking piece is like, we need to match. What does if my heart race is going, you know, my lovely breathing techniques may not work in that for me, and it might work very well for somebody else. And that's often what I hear is like, yeah, they tried to teach me meditation or mindfulness, and that's not for me, because that's not how their body's responding or what their body helps calm their body. Whereas maybe in a different way, a different reaction, it might actually help. And so that's where we need to kind of figure out in that trial and error is, okay, I'm feeling agitated. My body needs movement when I feel agitated. Lisa, you gave this wonderful example of what you do with your kids in movement, because it matches with what your bodies need in that moment. I wonder if you would mind sharing that, because that was a wonderful kind of to hear.
Yeah. So I just, when my children are, you know, more specifically my son, because he gets quite heightened with his dysregulation, and he needs movement a lot of the time. And I also match that. And so when we're feeling frustrated, oftentimes I'll get us to do some jumping jacks together. And so I am bringing myself down a little bit during that moment, and then it helps him as well. And we're getting that movement going, so that, you know, oftentimes just a little walk around the house or something isn't quite enough if I'm feeling really heightened. So more rigorous movement. And what you said was really interesting as well earlier about the shifting.
Yeah, bilateral. And so with movement, I think it's really interesting, because what I've heard is that people who tendency to feel like a lot of energy in their body in a hyperarousal state sometimes will go into like, I actually need to get it out. I need to move my body. And not for all people, but generally I've seen that as kind of a pattern, is like they can, if they cue into the internal world, that interception, that their body actually needs to move. Whereas if I asked, you know, Lisa, for you and your son to sit and do breathing, that likely may not work in that moment. It would probably agitate you more.
Yeah.
And so what you've done is you said, okay, my world, and be kind of cute to see like, what does that energy feel like at a 0 to a 10? And when does it start to need movement? And what type of movement? Because likely it's like, as it gets more energy, you need more like explosive movement, like to move it that much more. And like, mm-hmm. it needs to be highly intense in order to kind of almost get it out.
Yeah. Usually when I'd say when I'm at about a 5, when I'm quite agitated, then it's like, I'll take a sip of cold water, but that's just not going to do it. That's not going to cut it for me. When I'm feeling, and for me, it's like when I'm feeling like, okay, I've paused, I've, you know, looked at my chart and I still feel like yelling, that's when it's like, okay, move your body. You're very heightened right now. Move that body. And then usually that will help take care of that.
Yeah. I talk to people like jumping jacks. One of the favorites is going up and down the stairs. And you had mentioned bilateral. When we go up and down the stairs, we're actually going left foot, right foot, and we're moving our body back and forth. And bilateral can be actually really helpful. And so even in the jumping jacks, it might start as like getting the jumping jacks, and then maybe you just touch left side of the shoulder, right side of the shoulder, going back and forth. There's something about this bilateral movement that's really soothing for our nervous system and our brains. And that we're going between the left side of the brain, right side of the brain, left side of the brain, right side of the brain, which happens in running. It happens in like any of these sports that are going between both sides of the body, can be really helpful to start to calm us down.
Interesting. I'm going to try the tapping the next time, and I'm going to get my children to do that, and I'll touch base.
And then even like, if they want it, like knees up, left, right, like running the spot, get your knees up, back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. And then the really kind of things, if you want to bring back into co-regulation, get into like Simon Says, or like, so they get the energy out. And then we're going back into the regulation part, is like, mom's going to change now. Mom's going to change. Watch what I'm going to do. And you go into bilateral and they start to copy you. And then you start to regulate together again.
Yep. Sometimes we'll add a little bit of dancing, like just a quick little dance, because we're still moving and connecting at the same time after I've had that moment. Because like sometimes we don't feel like that physical connection unless we've brought ourselves down a little bit, right? Yeah. But our children really crave that connection when they are dysregulated, to help them regulate. And so, yeah, that helps me come back into, okay, I can touch you again without like really flying off the handle.
Yeah, and I love it, because our children give us this wonderful excuse to be silly and to play. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I'm, you know, maybe frustrated with my partner, if I start singing at him, he's going to look at me like I've got like 5 heads. Whereas if I'm feeling frustrated with my kids and I start singing about, mom's feeling so frustrated, they're like, they kind of look at me and they giggle at it and they think it's fun. And yet I'm regulating myself in those moments. Or if I start humming, it's funny because my son, that's something I use regularly. I start humming. He'll look at me and go, mommy, are you feeling stressed? Are you feeling overwhelmed? I'm like, yep, mom's going to, and it's really Aladdin and like Disney that I start to hum. So But I'm regulating myself, and I get to do it because I'm around my, I'm sure I do it in the car and whatnot, but I maybe I'm not looked upon as so strange when I start to hum in those moments with my kids, but they copy me. You see them, they'll sit there and start to hum too. You know, my twin toddlers, they will, just this morning, you know, one of them looks at me and goes,
yep.
My that deep breath, right? And that's, it's that repetitiveness, you know, role modeling, talking, narrating what's going on. And we get this lovely excuse with our children.
Yep.
Fun, just they're fun and funny.
Just quickly, if someone's in that hyper arousal state, what if, and that they need that movement, what if they're in that hypo, what if they go into that kind of shutdown or that, you know, kind of step back a little bit, how can they, is there something that they can use that might be different from maybe the out physical exertion? Yeah. Is there something that they could use?
It's interesting because actually hypo works really well to bring energy back into the system. Okay. And they may not need that high level of physical, like jumping jacks, but they may actually need to bring movement back into their body. So movement is quite lovely, whether it's rocking or it's like just getting up and walking around. It might be orienting yourself, and that's like scanning your environment, looking for things that make you feel safe. It could be like looking for, you know, I could find like 5 objects in my house that I really like. Mm-hmm. Once I'm starting to orient back into my environment, I might be getting up and bringing movement. It could be like just like kind of moving my arms. It may not be at that high level of intensity because you would have a hard time getting there, but moving into it. And generally it is like activating that nervous system again, which is done through movement. The hyperarousal is also, some people do need that high level, and there's going to be other people that are, we're going to actually kind of look at deactivating that nervous system and being able to bring it down through calming techniques. And that's where tracking your nervous system mm-hmm. is really helpful, because, you know, some people will say like after like a 5 or 6 out of 10 in like anger or rage or anxiety, they need high levels of movement. But before that time, they might need something like, I think you guys, that you've used like cold water, being able to take a drink of water. And I deepen that by saying adding a temperature. So you're using sensation and tracking that water. When it's really cold, you can kind of feel where it's going down and where kind of how far that cold water is into your stomach. And then I also look at using a straw. And so when we use a straw drinking water, we're actually cueing our rest and digest, as well as babies, when they're feeding, they calm themselves by sucking, right? We have our soothers, we have our bottles, we have nursing. They're all using that sucking reflex. We still have that as adults. And by using a straw, when we start to kind of suck water through a straw, it helps our nervous system also relax.
Amazing. I love this stuff.
Yeah, really kind of neat stuff. And so for me, I'll kind of share some of my journey is I like to practice what I preach and how I talk about things. And I never ask somebody to try things that I have not done myself. And so before I struggled, actually. I'm like, you're going to tell me to drink water right now? Didn't make any sense to me. And so I struggled with trying to be able to do it kind of in my younger days. And then I started to understand the kind of the brain science behind it, the neuroscience. I started understanding the nervous system, and I went, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Or now I'm learning kind of all of these nervous system interventions. And I'm like, well, I've known these for the past decade, but I never put them into practice or felt like there's value in them, because I didn't know why I was doing them and I didn't know how they worked. And that's been kind of a missing piece for myself, is understanding why water, or taking a drink of water, works in that moment. Why does movement work? Why does rocking? Why does humming work? Because now I understand the why, I'm able to kind of invest more into my coping tools. And I'm also able to match them to what my body is feeling, not just like, okay, I'm going to just start pulling from a box of all my coping tools and hope that one of them works. No, yeah. I know that when my body feels you know, my stomach is a little bit off, I know that I'm going to reach for this coping tool. I like to compare it to, like, you know, you're building something, you know, when you're going to pull for your screwdriver, you know, when you're going to go for your hammer. That's the same thing with our coping tools. We know what keeps us in our window of tolerance, and we know what's cueing us when we're getting out of it, and what tool might work, and which tool is most likely to work.
Love it.
Is there anything else we want to cover?
I think that just the point that to be able to really for people to think about is to be able to start to build interoception, practice. And, you know, if people are struggling, being able to work with a therapist, a counselor, you two, like anybody that they feel like can help them understand themselves and their internal world is going to provide value. Because the more you understand about yourself and how you respond to things and what your body needs, what your brain needs, the more you're going to be able to build that for your children. And so reaching out is a strength. It supports us. We all need people. We need our community. Find your community. Find the supports, the people that get it and understand it, and to continue. You know, it's a lifelong journey for yourself. And investing in yourself, you're investing in your kids too.
Absolutely. You're building that brain. It's not something we expect to come on track right away. Just like we had kind of mentioned when we were chatting beforehand, like if you're going to the gym, you know, my goal isn't that I'm going to go to the gym twice and then come out like pumped. It's we're building the brain just like we build our muscles and our biceps and our calves and all of that other stuff. So it takes practice and diligence and working on it and commitment.
And what we're learning from, you know, neuroscience is neuroplasticity, that the brain is changing and we can make changes to our brain. And that the cool part about when we're with our kids and we're doing things as parents is, I don't know the exact statistic, but it's like one, it takes 1,000 times of repetition to make, you know, to understand things unless you're doing it through play. And then it takes 10. And so that's us too, right? Like our children, when they get to play and they practice through play, it takes a lot less to be able to make changes and understand them. And when we do it through play, we get to go in that one, like it takes 10 times versus that 1,000 times of repetition. So play. Our kids provide us a really good environment to be able to do that. And to know that you're building relationships through play, you're also building your brain.
Yeah, and the long-term benefits of raising our children, seeing our growth and being able to teach them these skills is just, so important and all around. Thank you so much, Jen, for sharing all of this amazing information. Families, we really hope that you have taken last podcast episode and this episode. And if you, like Jen said, if you need any help, reach out. Like asking for help is a sign of being strong and wanting to keep growing. And this is what we need to do as adults, especially as parents. So there's no shame in it whatsoever. Reach out, ask for help. If you're not sure, contact Lisa or I. We will help you figure out where to go. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode. We so appreciate that you've taken that time to come and hang out with us and listen to what we have to say. If you are struggling with sleep or parenting, please know that we have loads of free information on the website as well as on the YouTube channel. But if after you've read through everything and you've watched those videos, if you're still struggling, know that you're not alone and that we would love to help. So be sure to check out the website, www.restfulparenting.com. You'll find the link to book your free 15-minute call right there. And if you have any comments or anything you'd like to share with us, please leave them below in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks.